Election College, episode 183. John, his accidency Tyler.
Let's throw a political party. Face it, the political scene sucks, but did it always? It's time for Election College, and class is in session. Now, your hosts, Jason Goff and Ben Smith.
Jason, this is an election podcast, or at least in theory it is. We obviously don't always talk about elections or even anything related to them, but we pretend like we do. But John Tyler is a guy who was, you know, he was president and he had some elections in his life, but he didn't exactly get elected to be the president.
Yeah, he was known as the guy who was running alongside Tippecanoe. That's basically it. And then, I don't know, maybe we're jumping the gun. He did a lot of stuff beforehand, right?
Absolutely.
And after.
We're going to talk about that. But if you, we talked about, you know, how everything went down a lot more back, a long time ago, whenever we discussed the sequential elections. So I'll throw that link in the show notes if you want to hear more about, you know, the actual nitty gritty of things. But we're going to talk about the man, the myth, the legend, his accidency here for a little bit. John Tyler was born in March of 1790 in Charles City County, Virginia. How would you like that now? Like if you told somebody, I'm from Charles City County, and they're like, well, which is it? Is it city or is it county or both?
Yeah, anyway. that's pretty long. I think in Virginia, you've got counties and then you've got independent cities that don't fall within a county, which is kind of different. But Charles City County, somebody was, they didn't go to branding school. You know, they didn't attend that seminar.
Exactly. And John Tyler was from a family that's kind of well off. They're, you know, you would call them aristocrats, and they were pretty well in with the political scene. And of course, you know, they go back all the way to Colonial Williamsburg and in the 17th century there. And interestingly enough, John Tyler Sr., John Tyler's dad, was a friend and, interestingly enough, even a college roommate of Thomas Jefferson. So you could say that, yeah, dad might have had a couple connections.
Yeah, and his dad served there alongside TJ and was also serving alongside our buddy who we just talked about, William Henry Harrison, his dad, Benjamin Harrison V. And John Tyler Sr., we're just going to call him the judge because that's what he was known as. And I have no idea why they called him the judge. They just did. No, I'm sure he did.
Not because he was a judge or anything.
Yeah. So he also was the Speaker of the House of Delegates before he became a state court judge. So it's totally legit to call him judge now. But anyway, so after his time there hanging out with TJ and William Henry Harrison's dad, he served as the governor and as a judge on the U.S. District Court in Richmond. And his wife dies when John is only 7 years old. John Jr., that is, not Judge.
So, yeah, John is left to be raised with his seven siblings. He's got five sisters and he's got two brothers. And they're raised there on Greenway Plantation, which is a place where his father had, you know, settled down and built a house and everything else. And it was a kind of a huge house. And they have 40 slaves and they grow a bunch of different crops, of course. And Judge Tyler is like, you know what? I have money and I want my kids to be smart. I'll go ahead and pay for people to come and, you know, teach my kids, tutor them. And Tyler, amongst this whole time, you know, early in his life and continuing on through his life, he's not real healthy. He, you know, is almost malnourished looking. He's prone to diarrhea and which if you're prone to something and it's diarrhea, I'm sorry, because that's just a rough, that's rough. But
yeah, in the early 1800s at that, I mean,
right.
He might have walked kind of funny. Maybe I shouldn't have said that, but he probably did.
Yeah. So he graduates at age 17. And after he graduates, he's like, hey, Dad, you're the judge. That's your name, after all. Why don't I study with you? And he ends up studying with Edmund Randolph, the United States Attorney General at the time, and was admitted to the bar at the age of 19. And here's the crazy thing. You weren't allowed to be admitted to the bar at the age of 19. It was against the rules. And the reason is because the judge who examined him was like, hey, you're a pretty smart guy. I don't need to ask if you're old enough. Surely you're old enough. It's like, you know, if you went to a bar now and you looked like you were 35, and they didn't ID you, but you're really too young. Yeah, that's kind of what happened. And his dad is then, you know, serving as the governor of Virginia. And John Tyler's like, well, hey, I guess I'm gonna start a practice here in Richmond. Cool.
Great idea. So in 1811, the 21-year-old John Tyler gets elected to the House of Delegates as a representative for Charles City County. And he serves there for 5 successive 1-year terms. And he sits on the Courts and Justice Committee. So it becomes pretty evident during his tenure there in the House of Delegates that he is a strong supporter of states' rights and he opposes a national bank. And he joins Benjamin W. Lee in pushing for the censure of U.S. Senators William Branch Giles and Richard Brent, who represented Virginia. And they voted for the recharter of the First Bank of the United States. And the legislature was like, hey, no, you can't do that. And keep in mind, the reason the legislature is saying you can't do that is because, well, the legislature sort of sends the senators at that era of U.S. history. They send the senators to D.C. to do their will.
If you have been paying attention to the timeline, you know it's almost time for that good old War of 1812 to come along in John Tyler's life. And, of course, we're getting into the possibility of a war here with Britain. And, of course, at the time, you know, they called it the War of 1812. So, right. Isn't that interesting, Jason? I've not been alive during a major, you know, war, or what we've declared as war. So imagine being alive during World War II and being like, oh, yeah, this is World War II. Cool. Just they had different names for them at the time, World War I, yeah. Especially. But
you know what, though? I remember on September 11th, 2001, I can remember looking at the calendar and being like, okay, today is September 11th. And just remembering, okay, there's something to this, 9/11. And then by a few days later, that's...
Right.
They started calling it that. But yeah, when you have a war that is called the War of 1812 and it's 1813 and you're still fighting in it, I just don't understand that one. I wonder if they titled the War of 1812 differently, if we'd pay more attention to it. I mean, you and I pay a lot of attention to it. But
yeah, we definitely would.
The culture at large, if you were to go up to somebody and say, what was the War of 1812 all about? Or give me a snippet of what the War of 1812 was about. They probably would just say, oh, it happened in 1812.
Mm-hmm. I was actually having that conversation today. I was in the car with one of my buddies who's a really smart dude. And he goes, I just found out that the one Penn State campus in Erie names all of their dorms after, you know, generals and boats and stuff like that from the War of 1812. He goes, I didn't know there was a war in Erie in 1812. And he's like a really smart guy. I mean, I would, and I, so I got to, of course, I got to bore him to death with a little bit of history, but yeah, he had no clue. Didn't know. Go figure. Huh. Anyway, so Tyler is very anti-British. And, you know, that's kind of the whole sentiment. That's kind of how we're in a war with them in 1812 or around 1812. And he's like, guys, we need to do some military action here. We need to organize a militia company to defend Richmond, which, by the way, is where he was. So, of course, he wants to defend Richmond. That makes sense. And then nobody comes to attack them. And so they dissolve the militia. And because of that military service of his, which didn't really result in anything, he gets a land grant near what is now Sioux City, Iowa. And shortly thereafter, in 1813, the judge, Tyler's dad, dies, and he inherits 13 slaves along with the plantation and becomes officially a slave owner.
Yeah. So in 1816, so just a few years later, in 1816, he resigns his legislative seat to serve on the Governor's Council of State. And that was a group of eight advisors who were elected by the General Assembly. And later on in that year, John Clopton dies, and he is a U.S. rep, and he passes away there in September. And that leaves a vacancy in the 23rd District. So Tyler seeks to run, and his friend, Andrew Stevenson, says, hey, I'm running too, buddy. And so these guys were running on pretty much the same platform. So it became kind of like a popularity contest. So Tyler, he was well-connected. I mean, he practically lived in the Capitol, right? And he pretty much told U.S. senators what to do, right? So he wins, barely. And he's sworn in December, and he serves as a Democratic Republican. And we are in that era called the era of good feelings. So things are going pretty good for him.
I feel like there should be a song about the era of good feelings.
I know. There really should be a song. Maybe we could write one, Ben.
Oh, I don't think that's a good idea at all. Maybe one of our listeners can write one.
I mean, we write, and maybe one of our listeners can put the music to it. And
there you go. Yeah.
If you would like to help us write a song about the era of good feelings, tweet us.
Hey, you know who I bet does have one is Mr. Beat.
Yes.
I bet he does, because he does a lot of those songs. So anyway.
You need to subscribe to his YouTube channel, ladies and gentlemen, if you haven't.
So Tyler is a slaveholder, we mentioned, and he is very big also into states' rights. And so he's actually really not a huge fan of slavery, or so he says, and he doesn't really attempt to justify the fact that, yeah, I don't like slavery and I also have slaves. But what he does say is that, well, slavery is a matter for each state. You know, the federal government doesn't really have the authority to say anything about it. So, you know, I'll treat my slaves well, but I'm going to continue to have them. And this is a, you know, as with everyone then and now, it seems, this is a huge ordeal of states' rights. And that comes back in a bigger way for John Tyler than any other president we've ever had. So we'll get to that in a little while later.
So during this era, you know, you've got Andy Jack, he's invading Florida, and he's getting a little overzealous, right? Because Andy Jack, I mean, he was doing all kinds of crazy stuff. But if you don't remember, in 1818, he invades Florida and fights the Seminoles. And this was not necessarily endorsed by anyone in Washington, but he took it upon himself. He's like, hey, my name is Andy Jack, and I'm a general. I'm going to do what I want. Tyler is like, you know what? He's a good guy. He's a decent guy, this Andrew Jackson. But he is overzealous because he executed two British subjects. So that's a little bit of a contradiction, you know? It's another contradiction with John Tyler, because here he is. He's this guy who says, well, his character is good, but he executed two guys, so I don't know about that.
So he's also, you know, during the same time, and all these things kind of run together, the issue of whether or not Missouri should be admitted to the Union and whether or not slavery would be permitted in a new state. And he did, you know, dislike slavery, according to him, and he wanted it to expand at the same time, which is interesting. But he wanted it to expand because that might mean that as people moved west, there'd be fewer and fewer slaves. So he ended up, voting against Congress's authority to be able to regulate slavery. He votes against the Missouri Compromise, and he doesn't win any of those things, of course. You know, he gets, he votes against them, and, well, they pass anyway. So he in 1820 says, you know what, I'm not going to seek renomination. I've got bad health. And really, it probably was because everything he voted for was really symbolic in a way, because nobody ever listened to him and he didn't change anything politically. So he gets out of there. He also complained that it would be hard to raise and fund his children's education on a very low salary of a congressman. So he leaves office in March of 1821 and returns to a private law practice full time.
Yeah. So he's sitting on the couch for a couple of years there in Virginia. He's eating ho-hos and probably watching Oprah. You know, that's what politicians do. They, when they retire, they kind of sit on the couch. And
don't you think it would be like, imagine if you were alive in the 1820s and you said about couch and it just made me realize they didn't have couches and stuff in the 1820s. Imagine how uncomfortable you'd be in your living room while you're watching the TV that doesn't exist.
Oh, that'd be horrible.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, he's hanging out, twiddling his thumbs in an uncomfortable chair in his living room and or parlor, maybe.
Yeah.
And he's like, I am so bored doing this, because he's been doing this for 2 years. He's just, his thumbs are getting sore from twiddling him so much. And he decides to run for the House of Delegates there in Virginia in 1823. And this was pretty easy for him to get elected because the incumbent wasn't seeking re-election. And there he goes. So in December, he takes his seat and the chamber is debating about the presidential election of 1824. And you know what's going on in 1824. It's chaos pretty much electorally, because you've got the person who wins the Electoral College losing because Congress decides, hey, we want the Q in. We don't want Andy Jack in. So the Congressional Nominating Caucus decides that they don't know what in the world they're going to do. Tyler says, hey, William H. Crawford, he really needs to be the president. And the legislature says, yeah, that sounds good. But there was some opposition to the caucus system, and they ixnayed Tyler's proposal to get William H. Crawford to be the Democratic Republican candidate. So there he is, serving on the state legislature, and it has national ramifications. We could probably do a whole episode on that. We could probably do a 10-episode series, Ben, on the election of 1824, because it's just chaos from the beginning.
That's true. That'd be really interesting as well.
Yeah.
It's not as, so, not as timely as it could have been, but hey, that's all right.
Right. Probably the best thing that Tyler is known for during his second stint in the House of Delegates is that he did a lot to save the College of William and Mary. Believe it or not, enrollment was dwindling and it was on the verge of collapse. And Tyler said, no, let's keep it there in Williamsburg. Don't move it to Richmond. Some were suggesting that. Keep it in Williamsburg. Trust me, in 100 years, some rich dude's going to come around and really pump a lot of money into this city and make it a huge attraction. Don't let it don't let it stumble. No, but he proposes a series of administrative and financial reforms, and then they were passed into law. And by 1840, the school was back better than ever.
So this whole time, he's becoming more and more noticed, I guess you could say, in the political way. And people are like, you know what, he might be a really good candidate for the whole 1824 U.S. Senate election. And he gets nominated then in December of 25 to be the governor of Virginia. And that position is actually appointed by the legislature. So he gets elected 131 to 81. So almost, you know, a landslide, I guess you could say. And the problem with that was the office of the governor is worthless. Like, you can't do anything. You can't even veto stuff. And so he really gets just a really good opportunity to talk all he wants and for everyone to hear his thoughts on things. But as far as influencing actual change and the legislature and stuff, he doesn't have a shot at all. So when he, you know, one of the most important things he does when he's governor, or the most visible things, he is able to give the funeral address for Jefferson, for President Jefferson. So, you know, Tyler was really close to Jefferson, and you know, it was a heartfelt speech. Otherwise, his governor position was not great. He basically touted states' rights. He basically said federal power is not, that's an oxymoron. The Fed shouldn't have any power. And he gets then elected as a delegate in 1829 to the Virginia Constitutional Convention. And he's in the same Senate district as Chief Justice John Marshall.
Yeah, so during this time, he also served as president of the Virginia Colonization Society. So it was around this time as well, in the late 1820s and early 1830s, that he serves as the president of the Virginia Colonization Society and as rector and chancellor of the College of William and Mary. Because after all, he saved the school, so...
True, yeah.
You know. So backtracking just a little bit. In 1827, the Virginia Assembly is like, should we elect this John Randolph guy for a term in the U.S. Senate? I mean, he was a supporter of states' rights, and that was very much a popular opinion in the Virginia House of Delegates at the time. But he had a reputation for being a little erratic, okay? He just made his friends feel a little awkward, we'll put it that way.
So Tyler's been having a little bit of an issue with his party. And during the 1830s, everything kind of comes to a head. And through a long series of events and multiple different contingencies and deals and arguments and etc., he ends up breaking with his party and joining up with the Whigs. And that gets interesting in 1836 because, well, the Whigs are going to try to, you know, put somebody in office in 1836. And he gets suggested a couple times as a vice presidential candidate. But the Whigs aren't really big enough to have a, you know, a national convention. And they want to beat Van Buren, but they don't have enough, like, really drive to do so. So instead, the Whigs are like, well, our region will do our thing. Your region can do your thing. Hopefully we'll just get enough votes to just, you know, destroy Van Buren, and that'll be great. So, you know, the couple different areas of the country have William Henry Harrison on their ballot. A couple have Daniel Webster. Some have John Tyler. Some don't. It ends up not working out for him in this situation because Van Buren ends up winning. And hopefully you heard about Van Buren a little bit previously here on Election College.
Yeah. After the 1836 election, Tyler thought that, okay, I'm done. After all of this contention and everything, I'm finished. He wanted to return to private law practice. They brought in a new sofa to his house, and he's like, hey, I could twiddle my thumbs on a much more comfortable seat. here at home, that's not true, ladies and gentlemen. Disregard any couch potato references that I mentioned in this podcast. But so he's hanging out there, and he's got this private law practice. And in 1837, a friend of his sells him some property in Williamsburg. And he's like, I gotta do this. So he gets elected to the House of Delegates in 1838. And this time, so this is his third stint in the Virginia House of Delegates. He's really well known all across the country because of his dealings, you know, all of these national roles that he's had. So Tyler continues this so Tyler's reputation of not necessarily supporting his party continues. So Tyler is back in politics, and he is kind of doing his own thing. He doesn't really align totally with the Whigs. He doesn't align totally with the Democrats. He's his own guy. And that takes us into the days leading up to 1840. And that is where we are going to pick up in part two of the life of John Tyler.
If you want to show us that you are supportive of us, I've got two big things you can do. The first is go check out our Patreon page. Patreon is a place where you can support creators you like. It is electioncollege.com/PATREON. The link is in the show notes. The second thing is leave us a review on iTunes. Yeah, go over to iTunes. If you're using the app, you can do it right there. If you're not, you know, most computers come with iTunes on them nowadays, right? That's got to be a thing now, like Minesweeper.
I would think so.
So just go over into iTunes and look up Election College and leave us a nice little review. Tell us what you think. And every person who does that gets their wings or something like that. Some kind of something.
And speaking of getting some kind of something, Ben and I do a happy dance every time a review comes in from iTunes. That's right. Even if you're not listening to the podcast in iTunes, please do us a favor and go to electioncollege.com/iTunes and leave us a rating and review. It helps us so much get in front of more people just like you.
Please interact with us over on our social media channels. It's great to have conversations with you. We enjoy it. We hope that's not one-sided. We hope you enjoy talking with us as well. And you can do that on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Election College.
Yeah, we'll see you next time.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.